Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It is Monday, May 10th. Before we begin, I'd like a roll call of the committee.
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused.
Representative Valderrama.
Present by phone.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you everyone who is joining us for this meeting. We ask that if you are coming into the room with us to present testimony, that you keep your camera off and your microphone off until you're called on to testify. And I will try to give people advance warning so that you can be prepared for being called on when it's time. We're going to start our meeting with the first item on the agenda as it was published. We're starting with a work session on a bill that we've already heard. I'm opening this work session on House Bill 2457, LRO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, House Bill 2457, this is a measure that is represents the annual reconnect bill for the point-in-time connections. So this is a bill that the legislature generally sees each legislative session, and it's updating the connection date to the Federal Internal Revenue Code and other provisions of tax law from December 31st, 2018 to April 1st, 2021. And that April 1st, 2021 date change is reflective in the Dash 8 amendment. So the Dash 8 amendment is technically, it's a gut and stuff amendment just because there's so many changes in statute that it's just easier to write it that way. But the only change is changing that date to April 1st, 2021. And that's to capture the most recent federal tax law changes that occurred all the way up until just last March. So just a quick refresher on the bill. Again, Oregon has generally two ways in which we connect to the Internal Revenue Code. The first is what's considered the rolling reconnect, which is the connection to the federal definition of taxable income. And then our second connection is the point-in-time connection. And that's what's in front of you today in House Bill 2457 and with the Dash 8 amendment. So most of the changes that occur at the federal level often will get incorporated into Oregon tax law through our rolling reconnect, so they're automatically through our connection. The point-in-time connections, one policy that does get picked up when there are federal changes, then can filter through to Oregon by changing our connection date to after the date in which the change was made at the federal level relates to the earned income tax credit. So that's what you see in front of you in the revenue impact statement, is there were changes made to the federal earned income tax credit, and by Oregon moving our connection date to after those changes were enacted at the federal level, would incorporate those federal changes into Oregon's earned income tax credit, because Oregon's earned income tax credit is simply a percentage of the federal credit. So again, those changes made at the federal level and the revenue impact estimate, that's contained in the estimate for the House Bill 2457 with the Dash 8 amendment, which you'll find in the meeting materials on OLIS. There's also some other materials that describe the changes made at the federal level for you as well. We also have the fiscal impact, and there's no impact expected on the fiscal.
Good. Thank you very much for that explanation. And I'm going to stall for just a few seconds here while Representative Smith's connection is being established for the committee meeting. And while we're waiting for that, committee members, do you have any questions for Mr. Easton? I don't see any questions. Would someone like to make a motion for House Bill 2457 to update our point-in-time connection.
Chair Nathanson, I move to adopt the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2457.
Vice Chair Reschke moves to adopt the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2457. Is there any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Could we have a roll call vote on this amendment motion?
Representative Levy?
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith?
First of all, Representative Smith is present by telephone, and I vote aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2457 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2457 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? I don't see any. We're ready for a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Mr. Alanak, what else do we need for this bill before I close the work session?
Just a carrier, Madam Chair.
Okay, for now, you can mark me down as carrier.
Okay.
I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2457. And it'll take me just a couple of minutes to get ready to open the public hearing on the next bill. The next bill we're going to hear will be House Bill 3160. So let me get some paperwork ready. Okay. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3160. And as we get ready to hear an explanation from LRO, as we're getting ready to call on the witnesses, I want to let everybody know that we have quite a few people signed up to testify on both this bill and the next bill that we're having a public hearing for today. There are at least 16 people testifying on this bill and 21 people testifying on the next bill. We will ask you to, after we hear about the bill from the author of the bill and from LRO, I will ask everybody who's testifying to please limit their comments to 2 minutes each. And if someone who has spoken before you has basically given the same kind of comments, your thoughts or idea, you could tell us just ditto, I support the comments of Ms. or Mr. So-and-so, and really think that that's an important issue for the committee to think about. So, LRO, let's hear about House Bill 3160.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, this is Caitlin Harger with the Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 3160, the introduced version, establishes a $10 surcharge on property and casualty insurance policies written in Oregon with a $1,000 minimum fee paid to the state. And the proceeds from this are put into a fund that's goal is to fight wildfires. And the bill outlines appropriations that would be made to various boards and areas where the funds will be used to address the wildfires. I'm not going to detail all of that right now, just for time purposes, but I'm happy to provide any answers that the committee might need. But the main tax policy here is the $10 surcharge. There is a Dash 2 amendment, which replaces the bill, but the main change to the tax policies are that now instead of a $10 surcharge, it's a tiered surcharge based on different levels of premium value. And so it's $25 per year for policies with premium amounts of $10,000 or less, $50 per year for properties of annual amounts more than $10,000. That is for fire insurance or for commercial or farm. And then on the residential side, there's a $10 per year for policies with $1,000 or less as the premium value, and $25 per year for policies with more than $1,000. And the last thing I'll mention briefly is that the Dash 2 explicitly says that a 3/5 vote is needed. The introduced version would also need a 3/5 vote. It's just not explicitly written currently.
Thank you. We're going to start with the author of the bill, the chief sponsor, Representative Marsh. After that, I will be calling on, I'm going to list just the first few names so that you can be prepared. The first few names after Representative Marsh will be Roger Johnson, Nils Kristofferson, Marjorie Taylor, Stephen Ito. Okay. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I represent House District 5, which is Southern Jackson County in Southwest Oregon, a region of the state which, unfortunately, as we proved in 2018 and again in 2020, is at extreme risk of catastrophic wildfire. In Oregon, in fact, 6 of the top 10 communities at risk of wildfire are in Jackson and Josephine counties. Medford, the largest city in the region, ranks 3rd. My hometown, Ashland, is 9th. Over the past few years, Southern Oregon has suffered through several weeks of choking smoke from massive wildfires in every direction. And then in September 2020, fires destroyed over 2,500 homes in my district and 4,000 statewide. Statewide, the towns of Detroit, Blue River, Gates, Phoenix, and Talent were devastated, and more than 1 million acres of forest land was torched. Total costs of response damage and debris removal have been estimated at well over $1 billion. The environmental, economic, and human impacts continue to unfold daily. From the Columbia River Gorge to Curry County, the McKenzie River to Bear Creek, much of Oregon is scarred, both our landscape and our people, in the wake of cataclysmic fires. I think it is safe to say every single Oregonian has been affected by wildfire in some way. To our collective dismay, this is not a new talking point. This is my 3rd term in the legislature, and with each new session, there's discussion about what we need to do. We need more firefighting equipment and personnel. We need to ramp up the pace and scale of work in the forest to thin hazardous fuels built up after 100 years of fire suppression. We need to help homeowners and landowners create defensible space. We need to restore the waterways, forests, and communities where fire has wreaked havoc. But every time this discussion arises, it ends with the same old and enormous obstacle in our way. We must first find a funding source. So House Bill 3160 provides a solution to this conundrum by establishing the Oregon Wildfire Preparedness and Community Protection Fund. In simplest terms, this bill will place a small surcharge only on certain property insurance policies that have the closest relationship to fire claims. The Dash 2 amendment refines the original bill significantly from what was heard in the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Management. First, the amendment narrows both the number and types of policies that would be subject to the surcharge, while tightening the nexus between the surcharge and the benefit that property owners receive from the activities that are funded by the bill. We intentionally selected policies for properties that are most impacted by fire, and we excluded those that are not, removing autos, renters, aircraft, and inland marine, which covers the movement of goods around the state. In total, relieving over 3 million policies from the surcharge. I'll note that to exclude some policies, the bill must name the others that remain subject to the surcharge. There are no new policies in this amendment that weren't already covered in the original bill. The Dash 2 also addresses concerns about recursivity, ensuring that those with the highest valued assets pay more of the share, with the amount of the surcharge depending on the yearly premium paid by policyholders. Commercial lines of insurance will include commercial multiple peril, farm owners multiple peril, and fire policies. Those commercial property owners will pay $25 a year for policies that have a yearly premium up to $10,000 and $50 a year for policies with a yearly premium over $10,000. For personal lines of insurance, including fire and homeowners multi-peril policy, the surcharge is lower at $10 a year for policies with a yearly premium up to $1,000. And $25 for policies with a yearly premium over $1,000. For those of us who don't track yearly insurance premiums closely, here is how that would affect most policies subject to the surcharge. Since the average commercial policy costs about $3,000 per year, the average business owner would pay $25. Since the average farm policy costs $2,850 per year, the average farmer would pay $25. And since the average homeowner's policy costs about $795 a year, the average homeowner would pay just $10. In the long term, with the types of activities that the Wildfire Preparedness and Community Protection Fund will implement, the result should be that insurance companies should have fewer payouts to policyholders. And meanwhile, we can provide protection to a vast array of businesses, farms, and homes across the state. Based on data provided by DCBS, it is reasonable to anticipate that the Oregon Wildfire Preparedness and Community Protection Fund will generate around $40 million per biennium. These funds will be collected and remitted to the Department of Consumer and Business Services and appropriated to three agencies, the Oregon State Fire Marshal, the Oregon Department of Forestry, and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. 50% will go to the state fire marshal and be used to prepare for and protect against wildfires, to develop and implement community wildfire protection plans and programs, and to fund wildfire equipment, training, technology, and supplies. 25% will be appropriated to the Department of Forestry to restore landscape resiliency, reduce hazardous fuels, and minimize forest vulnerability to drought, insect infestation, and disease through thinning and prescribed burning. And 25% will be appropriated to the Watershed Enhancement Board to provide grants on federal, state, tribal, local, and private lands that improve forest health and reduce hazardous fuels, as well as for recovery activities in areas that have already been subjected to wildfires, including reforestation, watershed rehabilitation, drinking water protection, and erosion control. Colleagues, we know that meeting our fire protection and recovery needs will never be one and done. It is time for us to acknowledge that our wildfire reality and to develop an ongoing, predictable, and stable source of revenue to do the work necessary to keep communities across the state as safe as possible in the face of increasing threat. These funds will give priority to programs, activities, and projects that protect lives, communities, and infrastructure. These are dollars that will improve and enhance watershed health, water quality, and resiliency in response to climate changes. This is money we need to help us achieve overdue work in our forests to reduce risk. And here is some good news. While there is no shortage of work that needs to be done, we are ready to do it. Recent polling conducted across the state revealed that Oregonians are worried about the threat of wildfire and willing to pitch in to help. A strong majority support an insurance policy-based approach to funding wildfire protections, just like the one we have proposed in House Bill 3160. Colleagues, if we do not learn and act upon the lessons handed us, we are doomed to more devastation, loss, and human suffering. House Bill 3160 is a chance to take action. Thank you so much for your consideration of this bill and for listening to all those who are lined up behind me.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, and thank you, Representative Marsh. Basically, I really like this bill. I think it's a great idea. I just have one question because I don't understand insurance very well, even though I used to sell it in my younger years. So if you have numerous policies through a different agency like We have wheat, we have hay, and occasionally we used to grow potatoes. So those all get a different insurance policy. And they're all insured for, I would say, probably the $50 rate. Does that mean that we would have to pay $50 for each of those policies? That's the only question I have.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Thank you, Representative Levy. I think we have someone from DCBS who may be more qualified to answer that question than I do. My understanding is if the it's associated with the premium. So if it's contained in the group of policies that are affected, and it's a premium that's over $10,000, that there would be a separate assessment to each one of those. But again, DCBS may know more than I do on that fact.
Okay, well, I'm just like you. I like to fix the cost of the fires and the protections. And so thank you, I appreciate it.
Before we call on the next people for testifying, I'd like to see if either Mr. Cheng or Mr. Keene can answer that question in 1 minute or less. Otherwise, we would be delighted to have a written response from the agency.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, TK Keene here for DCBS, and happy to answer that and concur with Representative Marsh's conclusion. It's a per policy, and so it does depend on how the policies are combined, but it would be a per policy surcharge as described. Thank you.
Thanks for answering the question. And if there are no other questions for Representative Marsh, we will move on to some additional testimony. Next is Mr. Roger Johnson, followed by Nils Christofferson. Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I am Roger Johnson. I'm the fire chief for the Sisters Camp Sherman Fire District in Sisters, Oregon. And I'm testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association in support of House Bill 3160. First off, I'd like to thank Representative Marsh for bringing this bill forward and for her engagement with the fire service on this very important issue for our state. House Bill 3160 addresses many of the challenges Oregon's fire service has faced for years. Primarily, how do we fund wildfire prevention and resiliency efforts? House Bill 3160 effectively provides a long-term funding solution with a minimal fee added to insurance policies in Oregon. The money generated would assist communities with preparing and planning for wildfire. It would reduce hazardous fuels around our communities and restore landscape resiliency. Funds would be used for reforestation, watershed rehabilitation after a fire occurs. And funding would support proven programs like FireWise and local community wildfire protection plans. And these plans provide specific risk-based mitigation strategies at the local community level, which I think is important. House Bill 3160 is an important step in providing funding to protect our communities. Investments in prevention and resiliency can reduce future losses from wildfire in our state and expedite recovery of our landscape after a fire occurs. And I'd like to thank the committee for your work on House Bill 3160, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if any of the committee members have any. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your testimony. Next, we will hear from Nils Christofferson, and that will be followed by Marjorie Taylor.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, I'm Nils Christofferson, Executive Director of Wallowa Resources, a community-based nonprofit in Wallowa County. I support House Bill 3160 and the proposed fund to support critical investments in restoration, protection, and recovery from wildfires. My support draws from my service on the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response and over two decades of forest restoration work here in Northeast Oregon. Over the last 30 years, the average acres burned in Oregon have increased over 300%. Long-term projections are for this trend to continue, and in some places, like Northeast Oregon, to increase dramatically. We have a massive and growing problem across the state. We can't kick this can down the road. We need to treat it like the emergency that it is. We need to work on multiple scales with different strategies in different places to save money, save lives, save communities, businesses, jobs, and infrastructure, and save the beauty and critical value of our forested landscapes. Oregon led the West in innovative solutions to forest ecosystem restoration decades ago, but our neighbors to the north and south have leapfrogged Oregon in their recent investment and action. The fire conditions and their effects respect no boundaries. Oregon must invest and join neighboring states, federal agencies, private businesses, local government, watershed councils, tribes, forest collaboratives in responding to this challenge. We need a permanent, stable, predictable funding source to get more work done and develop long-term strategic plans for where, how, and who does this work. We need a solution this legislative session. House Bill 3160 provides this. I urge you to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the testimony. Next are two people from Department of Revenue. It looks like Marjorie Taylor is first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, the legislative director for the Department of Revenue. We certainly appreciate the underlying policy discussion of House Bill 3160. However, there was a technical change that we worked with Representative Marsh on and appreciate that opportunity. I do have Stephen Ito with me from our collections division who can explain a little bit more about how that was resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ito.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I'm Stephen Ito with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The department provides collection services for over 280 state agencies, boards, and commissions. I'm testifying today with regards to how the surcharge is collected in the introduced version of the bill and the technical fix in the included in the Dash 2 amendment. The introduced version of the bill, it requires insurers to remit it to the total surcharge to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, or DCBS, annually. And when an insurer fails to do so, DCBS must then forward to the department the names and amounts of insurers who failed to pay the surcharge timely. The bill prescribes the assignment to the department must take place within 16 days after the date of the insurer was required to submit payment to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. ORS 293231 requires debts be liquidated and delinquent before assignment to the Department of Revenue can take place for collections. 16 days doesn't allow enough time or sufficient time for debts to be properly liquidated prior to assignment. We appreciate Representative Marsh for working with us on the technical fix included in the Dash 2. The Dash 2 does address the department's original concern with the bill. However, it does create an inconsistency with current law that would require DCBS to forward debts to the department that are not yet required to be assigned under ORS 293231. The Dash 2 can be administered by the department. However, to avoid potential unintended outcomes, in our written testimony, we provided additional details regarding the conflict with ORS 293231, as well as a possible technical fix for the Dash 2 amendment. And that concludes my remarks. We're happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. And I'd appreciate it if you can stay in the room with us for a while and be available in case there's a question. Next, we will hear from Steve Wise. After that will be Bobby Cochran, then Roger Beyer, then Patrick O'Keefe. So Steve Wise.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and committee members. My name is Steve Wise. I'm executive director of the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy based in Ashland. We work throughout the Rogue Valley in Jackson and Josephine County, where, as you know, the Alameda and Obenchain fires devastated many parts of the area. I'm also here speaking on behalf of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. Not quite two dozen members, nonprofits like ourselves, working throughout the state and speaking in support of this legislation. Our organization was fortunate that none of our current conservation lands were impacted by the Alameda fire, but many, as Representative Marsh said, along Bear Creek and other parcels of land were devastated, including one that we're planning to get an easement on. So we've had this experience of the impact of fire and see how it is on the community, the stresses and the ecological degradation. On Bear Creek and elsewhere, the good news is that we noticed after the fire that restored areas where invasive blackberries and other weeds were taken out and replaced by natives, or the understory was thinned, fared better in these fires than untreated lands. It's true also that forest stand and understory management for fire resilience are really important tools for conservation land management, and ones that we've applied extensively elsewhere on private and municipal partner conservation lands, and plan to continue to expand our treatments like this for both fire resilience and climate resilience in the future. But for both of these reasons, fire and climate resilience, which are often the same or very closely related activities that we need to conduct for conservation purposes and for land's sustainability, need funding support from the state to match private and federal support. We see this bill, HB 3160, is a great way to do that at a modest surcharge, and we encourage you to support it. Thank you very much for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Bobby Cochran.
Hey, Madam Chair, members of committee. My name is Bobby Cochran. I'm with Willamette Partnership. Thank you for the opportunity to come and testify in support of HB 3160. I just want to ditto some of what Steve just said relative to the Alameda fire and Bear Creek. Willamette Partnership is a conservation organization that does a lot of work at the intersection of community development and health equity across the state of Oregon. A lot of the homes that were lost in the Alameda fire were affordable homes. We lost a huge amount of that housing stock as a result, and they're spending a lot of money both in the recovery. What HB 3160 does is it creates dedicated funding sources to get ahead of those kinds of disasters. And in particular, looking at federal funding for pre-disaster mitigation from FEMA, Oregon ranks 34 out of all 50 states in accessing that pre-disaster mitigation money. Willamette Partnership was able to work with Jackson County and some of the cities to access a grant for Bear Creek, but wasn't able to get the kind of local match we needed for the Santiam. And so the money we were going to be asking from FEMA for pre-disaster mitigation funds for the Santiam went unclaimed. So 3160 would create those additional funds to pull in the kinds of federal and private resources we need. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Roger Beyer. And after that will be Patrick O'Keefe, then Robert Horton, then Joe Mall.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer, and I'm here testifying in opposition to House Bill 3160 for both Independent Agents and Brokers of Oregon and Oregon Small Woodlands Association. First, for IBO, IBO opposes House Bill 3160 and the -2 amendments, specifically Section 5 of each. This section mandates a surcharge on real property and casualty insurance policies in Oregon, both commercial and residential. We do not believe that responsible insurance consumers alone should pay for restoration, protection, and recovery from wildfires. Some insurance policies are required by the state of Oregon and others by banks or contracts. Why should people who do not buy insurance but are still affected by wildfires not pay for these programs? If the funds and programs outlined in sections two through four of the bill are important to Oregonians, then they should be funded by all taxpayers via the general fund. I will submit written testimony to explain more about from independent agents and brokers. I would like to briefly go to OSWA. We'd like to point out that our members who live in the forest zones already pay a surcharge to the Department of Forestry for any improved lot and any minimum lot they own in the forest zone. This existing tax is used to fund the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which helps pay for large fire costs and severity resources for firefighting. Those who live in rural fire protection districts also pay for taxes for that services. In addition to that, these landowners are paying a per acre charge on all their land inside the forest district boundaries to the Department of Forestry for base fire protection services. Adding this tax to their insurance policies would be asking them to pay twice for services they are already paying for. The Department of Forestry under ORS 477060 has the ability to charge homeowners in forest urban interface areas an additional $25 per lot per year if the conditions warrant it. Under ORS 477062, the state forester has the authority to demand hazard abatement on forest land if he determines it is necessary and charge the landowner for completing it should the landowner not comply with the order. These authorities have very infrequently been used, if ever, since established in 1997 by the Department of Forestry. It is unfair to now charge insurance purchasing landowners a tax on their insurance to address the same issues which could have been dealt with via existing laws. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next is Patrick O'Keefe.
Thanks, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Stam and Rushke, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Patrick O'Keefe, owner of Cascade Insurance Center in Bend. I serve as the chairman of the Oregon Government Relations Committee for the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon and Idaho, or PIA. PIA opposes Section 5 in both House Bills 3160 and the Dash 2 Amendment. This section mandates an insurance surcharge to pay for wildfire regulation. In the amendment, it is up to $50 on a certain insurance policies in Oregon. Our clients are extremely sensitive to price increases on their insurance purchases, especially during these times of economic uncertainty. I can say with certainty they would not welcome having to pay higher premiums for any reason. Second, the insurance industry already pays for the lion's share of the funding of the Office of the State Fire Marshal, so we're already paying to help this effort. Why should our industry be mandated for an additional amount? During my testimony in the House Veterans and Emergency Management Committee, Chair Evans wanted to know the last time the fire insurance premium tax was increased that helped pay for the Oregon State Fire Marshal's office. The fire premium tax was increased from 1% to 1.15% beginning January 1st, 2014. The rate remains at 1.15%. These funds support the DPSST and the OSFM by statute, the Oregon State Police Arson Unit, and a portion of the OSFM administrative costs as well. The tax is imposed on gross premiums, as companies do not get any deductions, for fire policies and portions of homeowners and farm owners, multi-peril, commercial multi-peril, inland marine, auto physical damage, and aircraft physical damage policies. These gross premiums have gone up every year, so the amount of the fire marshal tax that companies are paying has also increased every year. The state fire marshal provided the information that when the tax started in 2011, the OSFM transfer amount from insurers was $8,054,957, and it kept rising so that the most recent amount in 2020 was $14,936,296. Please see my written testimony for more detail. Insurers used to be able to offset their fire marshal tax by claiming a tax credit against their corporate excise tax. For example, if a company owed $100 in fire marshal tax, they would be able to reduce the amount of excise tax owed by $100. However, after January 1st, 2018, insurers were no longer able to offset their fire marshal tax. So insurers' bottom line tax expense increased significantly. Please delete Section 5 from House Bill 3160 and the Dash 2 Amendment. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next is Robert Horton, followed by Joe Mall.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs, Pham, and
excuse me, Mr. O'Keefe, could you be sure to turn your camera and mic off? Thank you. I'm sorry for interrupting, Mr. Horton.
No problem. Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke. For the record, I am Bob Horton, Fire Chief for Jackson County Fire District 3, and serve as the Fire Defense Board Chief for Jackson County. Thank you, Representative Marsh, for being a great partner to the fire service and for championing a strong collaboration for community well-being, not just here in Southern Oregon, but across the state. I'm here in support of House Bill 3160. There is no question that the frequency and intensity of wildfires is trending higher and higher across the Oregon landscape, devastating our communities and threatening our quality of life. Our best chance to reduce the frequency and intensity of wildfires is to follow the tenets of the National Cohesive Strategy, to which my colleague Chief Johnson already spoke to. House Bill 3160 provides a key funding stream focused on measurable impacts to increase community level preparedness and risk reduction. This bill will further the necessary work of the Oregon Fire Service in protecting our communities. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you for being with us and for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next is Joe Mall. And after Joe Mall will be Kenton Brine and Denny Ritter.
Madam Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke. For the record, I'm Joe Mall. I'm the Executive Director of Mackenzie River Trust in Eugene, Oregon. We did experience the Holiday Farm fire directly, including lands that we own burned completely. I support House Bill 3160 based on two observations during and following the September fire. First, in the aftermath of the fire, the risks to the watershed are much more exposed. We now see clearly steep, erodible slopes, extremely narrow buffers between the highway and residential infrastructure and the river itself, and the patchwork of ownerships with different approaches to stand management. Coordination among these issues through fire resilience planning and action will help temper those risks to the basin, including risks to water quantity and quality for everyone downstream. The second reason, the response to the fire in our basin was quite good, in quotes, because 300,000 people were downstream watching the fire roll towards us. And two, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, the Springfield Utility Board, and other water districts have invested in the health of that watershed for a long time, related to a point that was made earlier about the nexus between a surcharge and the benefit. We see the direct benefit. But other basins nearby that are equally as vulnerable but have fewer resources or vested communities in them will be subject to the same fate with more wildfire coming. We need to get ahead of this since wildfires will continue. This bill, this approach is an upstream investment in time and place. We will all benefit from that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Mall. Next is Kenton Brine, followed by Denny Ritter, then Scott Bruin.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. My name is Kenton Brine. I'm the president of the Northwest Insurance Council. We're a nonprofit insurer-supported organization that provides information about property casualty insurance to policyholders and media folks and public policymakers like yourselves. I'm pleased to be here with you today. I'd like to let you know that, you know, the insurers have worked really hard this session with Representative Marsh on other legislation to help improve claims response in relation to the wildfires that Oregon has already seen. And we were a participant in the working group in the previous committee with Chair Evans and members of that committee as well, and are very interested in this topic and recognize the need for there to be a coordinated effort on fire prevention, mitigation, response, and recovery. However, like others you've heard here before today, have spoken to, we're concerned about Section 5 and the imposition of a new tax, premium surcharge, policy surcharge on policyholders across Oregon to pay for what really is something that's supposed to benefit all Oregonians. There's instead an effort to fund this with a tax exclusively on insurance policyholders, which we cannot support. I think there are, as was pointed out by Representative Marsh and others, there has been an effort, I think, in terms of intent to narrow the focus of the bill, which of course only makes the pool of people who are paying smaller, but we don't see that the language actually matches what we've heard the intent to be. We think the broad inclusion of the term property insurance in the beginning of Section 5 may supersede other language, which seems to be more narrowly focused on homeowners and business insurance. We believe that the tax remains regressive on policyholders because people of varying income levels can pay the same tax just depending on the size of the premium that they pay, and we don't think that that is fair. We would point out that every state has an insurance retaliatory tax.
And that may be, in fact, impacted. So the more tax you raise, the higher Oregon's effective tax rate goes, the less retaliatory tax Oregon can take in. So you're kind of giving with one hand and taking away with another.
Mr. Bryan. Yes. Thank you. That was the 2-minute timer.
Oh, it went by fast. All right. I'll submit written comments. And I think Denny Ritter is going to speak further to some of our concerns as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And we can receive written comments up to 24 hours from the start of the meeting today. So thank you. We'll look forward to getting that.
Thank you.
Denny Ritter, followed by Scott Bruin.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denny Ritter, and I'm here on behalf of the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. APCIA is a national trade whose members write about 60% of the U.S. property and casualty insurance market. We'll be providing written comments, so I'll attempt to be brief here. Insurers do not oppose HB 3160 in its entirety. We have no opposition to establishing a dedicated account in Oregon and fully support the goal of developing wildfire mitigation, prevention, and response planning in communities across Oregon. Our objection to the bill is exclusively related to Section 5 and the proposed Dash 2 amendments. We oppose this on behalf of our policyholders for the following reasons. Insurance taxes are ultimately paid, as with other industries, by consumers, and at a time when Oregon's economy is showing signs of life, but so many others are still struggling, we believe this is the wrong moment to add to these costs for insurance consumers. The amendments create a novel 4-tiered rate structure for the surcharge, which we feel is problematic and arbitrary. So a homeowner that pays $1,000 or less in premium for their insurance pays a $10 surcharge per policy, but a homeowner that pays $1,001 pays a $25 surcharge. Not only is that an artificial line to draw, it suggests an impossible incentive to be underinsured, which is already a problem we saw in Oregon's wildfires in 2020. And even with the Dash 2 amendments, we do believe the tax is still regressive. A single parent with 2 children making $35,000 a year renting an apartment in Southeast Portland would pay this new $10 tax on their $300 per year renter's policy, where a family with dual incomes over $200,000 per year with a $400,000 home and a $900 annual insurance premium would pay the same $10 tax. And for policyholders with multiple policies, this would mean multiple $10 or $25 surcharges on each of their policies. Additionally, this would be a really high policyholder surcharge. According to our national data, the $50 and $25 surcharge for commercial policies would be the first and second highest surcharges in the country. The next highest surcharge we're aware of is less than half of that in Connecticut.
Ms. Ritter, excuse me, that was the 2-minute timer. It was a little bit more like a gong. But that was.
I thought I heard that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony, and we'll certainly go more in depth in the written comments. Appreciate your time.
Good. Yes, please do send them in. We're happy to receive them. Next is Scott Bruin, followed by Edward Davis, and then Marianne Cooper.
Excellent. Well, good afternoon. My name is Scott Bruin, and I'm the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a member-led business trade association with approximately 1,600 members who employ more than 300,000 Oregonians. Madam Chair, OBI is opposed to the Dash 2 amendments of House Bill 3160. If enacted, this bill would place significant new fees on homeowners, property owners, and small businesses. First, please let me say that we all remember and lived through the wildfire events of this last summer and early fall. The question around the need for wildfire mitigation is not an issue, and we believe the actual mitigation programs outlined in the underlying bill and the amendments may be reasonable. However, Section 5 of the bill and the amendments, which we oppose, creates significant new costs and challenges that would be unfairly borne by a small subsection of the entire affected community. Wildfires, like COVID and other disasters, affect all of us. As such, we believe the cost should be borne by all of us, not relegated to just the group that is required to purchase property and casualty insurance. From a business perspective, this bill will be particularly onerous for those businesses with bigger insurance needs, especially those with commercial fleets and rolling stock. These new fees would also be regressive in that they don't in any way coincide with businesses' operating success or profitability. Doing well, you pay. Not doing well, you still pay. And we should also remember that every business in the state has already seen significant tax increases over recent years. Adding other significant fees, as this would do, in addition to those tax increases already baked in, serves as just one more impediment for businesses to grow, to hire, to invest, or even to consider whether they want to come to or stay in Oregon. Madam Chair, if this legislature determines that new wildfire mitigation efforts are necessary, we are hopeful that you will look first to the general fund support. Wildfires are a general statewide concern, after all, not a narrow one. As such, we oppose 3160-2. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is Edward Davis.
Thank you, Representative Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Edward Davis. I'm an insurance agent here in Salem. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers of Oregon. I'm a past president and currently serve as state national director for that organization. I'm going to submit some written testimony as well, so I'll keep these comments brief. My key points are the fairness of placing the entire burden of this well-meaning and well-deserved and needed effort on simply those people who have been responsible enough to purchase property insurance. Second issue that I have is that the basis for determining the surcharges has little or no obvious relationship to the either the risk or the reward to come from the path of there, to the extent that all Oregonians benefit from our state lands and the funds will be used to protect those and preserve them. Certainly all Oregonians should participate in that, to the extent that it's involved in providing recovery services for those Oregonians whose property is damaged. That really is more like a national flood program where the charge should be more risk related. And finally, the fact that the surcharge is based upon the total premium in multi-peril policies, the bulk of which are represented by liability and auto insurance premiums, the fact that there is a small property component in those policies doesn't necessarily suggest that they should bear a disproportionate version of the surcharge. So I would suggest that if you do choose to continue through with this method, at least base the surcharge on the portion of the policy premium that's related to property insurance and not the entire policy amount. I wouldn't want to create additional disincentives for people either to buy property insurance or to incorporate their property insurance into very efficient multi-peril policies. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the testimony. We had one more name on the list. I understand that Marianne Cooper is not available right now. Mr. Davis, thank you. I'm understanding that Marianne Cooper is not available right now. Committee staff, would you please confirm that that's the case and that we have completed the list of people signed up for today?
Chair Nathan. Yes, sorry, this is Samantha Baer from the Oregon Farm Bureau. I was able to step in place of Marianne Cooper, if I may give testimony.
All right. I didn't have your name. You're not on the sign-up list, but I'll allow it. I hope that you heard that there's a short time limit.
Thank you, Chair. I will be immensely brief, as I have already submitted written testimony. But for the record, my name is Samantha Baer. I am policy counsel for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you so much for letting me step in and give testimony. As background, the Farm Bureau is the state's largest agricultural trade association. OFB has significant concerns about this bill as drafted in the Dash 2 amendment. Specifically, the cost of this proposal could substantially stack up for those living in rural Oregon and may create an unfair, disproportionate impact on those living in the WUI. Rural landowners are already responsible for paying into our current fire funding model through property assessments. Just in the 2019-21 biennium, private landowners contributed over $35 million towards our base protection fund through those property assessments. Also, because of the unique nature of life on the farm, Oregon's farmers and ranchers may have a number of policies per field, have multiple work vehicles, buildings, personal vehicles, home insurance, and many more. Given that the $10 surcharge and the base, or the $25 or $50 surcharge in the dash two, is intended to apply, from my understanding, per policy, that could add a considerable amount of costs on landowners who have already helped bolster our fire protection system for years. For these reasons, we would urge the committee to consider further amending the bill to carve out those rural landowners who are already paying into our wildfire protection system and to create a more equitable funding solution for this important issue. In our mind, wildfire is an all-Oregon issue, and we believe it deserves a truly an all-Oregon solution. And thank you so much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks for the last minute engagement on our list. And I need to pause to get absolute confirmation that no one else has signed up. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Committee members, any final questions for people presenting testimony today, and we will look forward to reading any additional testimony that is sent in to us up to 24 hours from the time that this meeting started. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands go up. Thank you everyone for being with us today and providing succinct but very helpful testimony. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3160. I'm now opening a public hearing on House Bill 2357A. Can we hear from LRO, please?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. This is Jamie McGovern from the Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2357A does a few things. It reallocates the privilege tax component that goes to OFRI, the Oregon Forest and Resources Institute, and it reallocates those to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute Fund, their newly created Family Forest Land subaccount, and the Sound Forestry Practices subaccount. And then it directs the allowable usage of funds by the State Forestry Department. It expands the board of directors for Oregon Forest Resources Institute to include two more voting members, and adds a few additional requirements for reporting maintenance of records and outreach.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for LRO before we begin our list of witnesses? I'm not seeing any. We have a legislator signed up to testify. Is Representative Salinas with us? We will go to the next people on the list, and we will come back to Representative Salinas in case she's able to join us from another meeting. For this hearing, I will also ask for you to limit your comments to 2 minutes, no more than 2 minutes. We have more than 20 people signed up to testify, and if someone else has said basically what you were going to say, I'd appreciate it if you could just say in a way, me too, that you support the comments of a previous speaker, and that might help us conclude this by our ending time and still hear from everybody. The first person will be Sean Stevens. After Sean Stevens will be Dr. Beverly Law, followed by Amanda Astor and Roger Beyer. So first, Sean Stevens.
Can you hear me, Representative?
Yes.
Great. And I was hoping to have Representative Salinas intro the bill and some of the details, and maybe I can steal just a slight bit of her time to try to do that, to give more context to my remarks.
We're running the 2-minute timer.
Okay.
But she will be with us later, I believe.
Okay, great. Well, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Sean Stevens, and I'm the executive director with Oregon Wild. We're a statewide organization dedicated to protecting and restoring Oregon's wildlands. Wildlife and waters. Oregon Wild supports HB 2357 as amended and urges this committee to move it forward. I'd like to start by attempting to clear up any of the potential confusion around different elements of the forest harvest tax. As LRO just described, I think it's important to recognize that OFRI's portion of the harvest tax is authorized in statute separately from the remainder of the harvest tax. OFRI received support through the harvest tax statute ORS 321017, and that was permanently authorized decades ago by the legislature. And reallocating these funds, it requires a simple majority vote. That's different from the other harvest tax revenue referenced in ORS 321015. This portion of the harvest tax funds research at Oregon State University and administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. And the legislature must renew this portion of the harvest tax every biennium, and it takes a 3/5 vote to do so. And this committee actually held a separate public hearing in early April on that primary harvest tax reauthorization bill, HB 2070. And so again, OFRI is different than that part of the harvest tax. OFRI's tax statute is actually unique in other ways. The amount of taxes assessed are actually set every year by the OFRI Board of Directors, which is controlled by Industrial Timber Company representatives. And then the taxes are collected by the Department of Revenue and deposited in a suspense account at the Oregon Department of Treasury. Those funds are then deposited quarterly in the OFRI fund and are appropriated continuously to the Institute. So I hope that you can see that OFRI has lacked legislative revenue and budget oversight because of how its money is collected and authorized. And we believe that's contributed to a wayward organization that's been operating outside the bounds of the law. And that's why passage of HB 2357 will improve the use of the OFRI revenues with more legislative oversight and involvement. I can answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is Dr. Beverly Law.
Okay, hello there. Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. For the record, I'm Dr. Beverly Law, and I'm Professor Emeritus of Global Change Biology and Terrestrial Systems Sciences at Oregon State University. I'm testifying in support of 2357A, which would better support science-based actions regarding forests for climate mitigation, adaptation, and resilience. We have just a short window to change our forest management practices to address climate change. For reasons stated in my previous testimony before the Oregon House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources, I support reforming OFRI by prohibiting them from generalized advertising for public education. The stated priorities in the bill are worthy of significant funding. They also require changes that start at the top and training and hiring of qualified staff to carry out these goals. The priorities. One is support for climate science and climate smart forestry. I know what this will take, and ODF doesn't currently have qualified staff to estimate forest sector carbon emissions as strategies to reduce those emissions. Climate mitigation and adaptation means protecting biodiversity while preserving forest carbon in mature and old forests. Taking this seriously would be a major change for ODF, and they would need proper funding and a clear direction to do so. Enhanced monitoring and reporting of pesticide use in forests. ODF is one of the biggest users of pesticides in forest operations. These chemicals are harmful to avian and aquatic life and human health. I question whether ODF, as a significant user, can be responsible for robust monitoring and reporting of the impacts of these practices. Adaptive management driven by research and amending forest practices over time. ODF needs to help landowners create science-based defensible space in fire-prone regions, especially when communities are adjacent or embedded in forests. ODF could do more to help communities. ODF has significant room and potential for improvement. Achieving science-based policy goals will require oversight that ensures they are in fact using the best available science to address climate change, wildfire, and community safety. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next is Amanda Astor, followed by Roger Beyer, and then we will hear from Peter Sikora.
Chair Nathanson and committee members, for the record, my name is Amanda Astor, and I am here on behalf of the Associated Oregon Loggers as their forest policy manager. AOL is the statewide trade association and voice of Oregon's forest operators, and we cannot support House Bill 3557 and the -5 amendment. Oregon Forest Resources Institute was formed in 1991 by the Oregon legislature with the recognition, according to ORS 526.605, that, I quote, the welfare of the state is largely dependent on the health and vigor of the forest products industry, end quote. The importance of the timber industry to Oregon's gross domestic product and welfare is just as true today as it was in 1991. The forest sector generates more than $18 billion in base economic output, more than 61,000 total jobs a year, and around $8 billion in GDP for Oregon. According to the Secretary of State's Oregon Blue Book, I quote, the forestry sector is another crucial piece of Oregon's economy that supports employment in many private sector industries and in government agencies, end quote. AOL believes the overall impact of the timber industry on Oregon's welfare and employment and GDP warrants the continuation of OFRI's activities that are similar, although hampered, compared to other commodity commissions. Now, House Bill 2357-5 is trying to reduce the ability for OFRI to protect these economic outputs even more. The timber industry deserves its commodity commission to remain whole. ORS 526.605 also notes in OFRI's finding statute that, I quote, the Oregon Forest Resources Institute's objectives support this important industry and the wise stewardship of natural resources for the benefit of Oregonians, end quote. It is important to acknowledge that the word support was utilized in this statute, furthering the similarities of OFRI's goals to other commodity commissions. Now, OFRI is fully funded by timber producers, not general fund dollars. The tax levied upon these timber producers comes from the forest product harvest tax. The self-assessed rate is determined by OFRI's board members made up of rate payers. OFRI's board is who should be setting these rates, and it should be rate payers setting those rates. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is Roger Beyer, followed by Peter Sikora and Jeremy Felty.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association in opposition to House Bill 2357-8. For Oregon's 79,000 family forest owners who manage one-third of Oregon's private forests, OFRI has positively influenced the management of Oregon's family forest owners who do not have a staff of professional foresters. This bill would eliminate 67% of the funding for OFRI and charges ODF to build programs to replace those functions. Currently, OFRI provides science-based and reviewed publications at every phase of forestry, from growing and harvesting trees to all the public values found in Oregon's forests. This bill would change how OFRI is allowed to interact with and educate forest land owners. The agency that regulates the Forest Practices Act should not be the same agency building educational programs about it. OSLA cannot support this change. Oregon's land use laws mandate land zoned for forest land must be maintained as forest with some minor options to convert to agriculture. By statute, the purpose of Oregon's private forest is to grow and harvest trees, just like the purpose of a land zone for agriculture needs to grow an agricultural crop. The need for a commodity commission for forest land is no different than the need for any other commodity commission for an agricultural crop. It is clear OFRI is a commodity commission for Oregon's private forest landowners, and such OFRI is no different than any other commodity commission, except that it is housed under the Department of Forestry instead of the Department of Ag. Like all other commodity commissions, the voting members of OFRI are producers who pay the assessment, along with one member representing the public. Adding two new voting members to the board who have no interest in forest products industry being successful concerns us greatly. All the meetings are already open to the public, and the public has an opportunity to make comments when the board meet. What value to the timber industry will these new members bring? The changes to the OFRI board under this bill would jeopardize OFRI as a commodity commission. These commissions in Oregon are for producers, governed by producers, and paid for by producers. One of the primary assertions is that OFRI is funded by tax dollars, but in fact, it is funded by the forest products harvest tax. And forest owners pay that tax and can opt out if they wish. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Peter Sikora, followed by Jeremy Felty, and then David Eisler.
Good Thank you. Can you hear me, Chair Nathan?
Yes.
Okay. Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, my name's Peter Sikora. I'm representing Justina Resources in Springfield. I'm opposed to HB 2357 in its entirety for many reasons that I've identified in previous written testimony, but today I'd like to address the proposal to divert 50% of OFRI's private funding to ODF to develop and apply sound forestry practices. The problem with this is that it implies ODF hasn't already developed sound forestry practices with existing funding, which already comes from the private sector funds. The largest share, the forest products harvest tax, with 35%, already goes to ODF for the administration of the Oregon Forest Practice laws. Since the laws were first adopted 80 years ago, Oregon's forest practice laws have continuously evolved as the body of science has informed rules to safeguard water, fish, wildlife, soil, and air. And more changes are occurring through the current private forest accord process. Forest owners invest for the long term and face many risks such as fire, weather, insects, disease, markets, and many others over the decades, and it takes the whole investment in their crop to mature. Political risk is also very real and can factor into a landowner's decisions regarding the use of their land. Deforestation does not occur if a landowner replants following harvest of their timber crop as required by law, but converting the forest to another use, such as a vineyard, is deforestation. OFRI's educational programs help forest owners keep forest land as forest land, and this bill would effectively cripple OFRI's educational mission. This is only one element of a flawed bill that is punitive and discouraging to all those that take the financial, emotional, and physical risk to make very long-term investments in their private forests. OFRI's existing mission and governance is appropriate and in line with Oregon's many commodity commissions. Please do not pass HB 2357 out of your committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks for the testimony. Jeremy Felty.
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and other members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today. For the record, my name is Jeremy Felty, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Society of American Foresters, or OSAF. As the current state chair, we are a scientific and educational organization representing the forestry profession and have 800 members in Oregon working for a diverse set of natural resource employers. OSAF considers educating Oregonians about forestry as one of our most important professional responsibilities. OFRI has been an educator for all Oregonians, children, teachers, landowners, foresters, and even legislators. The OSAF appreciates and relies on the educational materials and programs that OFRI has created. Our members are happy to help develop these materials and provide over centuries of combined knowledge of forestry and natural resources to these programs. OFRI is telling the scientifically accurate story of our valued forest resources and their legally sound active management. The current OFRI board is made up of individuals with forestry backgrounds from diverse settings and work environments, genuine experts in the world of forestry. HB 2357's current amendment would add two additional members to the board and further complicate the makeup of this board. The board has ex officio representation from the Oregon Department of Forestry and the OSU College of Forestry. The wide sweeping level of expertise is already there and comes from other functioning state partners. The way these two positions on the board are written in this new amendment are simplified and lack dedicated detail to indicate the significance of these individuals and any supporting criteria behind either of them. Additionally, as a commodity commission, the inclusion of someone without the understanding of forest practices, forest products, and the economy will effectively slow or halt the good work OFRI has been doing. Twisting and pulling apart this organization is harmful and destructive to the educational goals that OFRI has met and continues to meet. I urge you to oppose House Bill 2357. Thank you.
Thanks for the testimony. Next is David Eisler.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Eisler. I'm a resident of Lane County. In consideration of the time, I'm going to start in the middle of what I've got and try to avoid the gong. What I find particularly disturbing is that OFRI has never seemed to have recognized this alternative type of forest management. For instance, while OFRI did not contest the data on impacts to water quality and water volume in OSU's Forest ATAP research, OFRI stopped short of offering foresters and the public informative options that include an alternative low impact management. In fact, research strongly suggests that ecoforestry management offers the best hope for our future functioning forests as we enter a more dramatic phase of global warming. OFRI has failed to offer small woodland owners that important forward-looking information. And OFRI has failed to provide landowners with warnings about the impacts of plantation forestry and the risks of monocrop stands in fire behavior and disease spread. One of OFRI's website videos states that good forestry manages for the future needs. And that is certainly true, but our future needs are quickly shifting. The large number of small woodland owners in Oregon need truly informative, unbiased research to guide their efforts in managing their forest land into the future, including options such as ecoforestry management, carbon markets, carbon banks, conservation easements. I feel it's important to step forward in restructuring the funding that has gone to OFRI over these many years to agencies and programs that will more effectively address the changing needs of Oregon's small forest landowners. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eisler, for your testimony. And as a reminder to everyone, we welcome additional written comments if there's other material you wanted to let us know about. Even though we have only limited time for the verbal testimony, we welcome written comments up till 3:15 tomorrow afternoon. It's 24 hours after the beginning of the meeting. So please do send something in if you have it, something you'd like to share. Representative Salinas has just joined the meeting. Representative Salinas, we still have an awful lot of people to testify, but if you would like to spend a minute or two explaining the bill to us, we'd welcome hearing from you.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the House Committee on Revenue. And thank you for giving me some time in support of House Bill 2357A. As I'm sure you've already heard, this is not the same bill that was introduced. The bill has changed quite a bit. It was in Ag and Natural Resources. We heard from the small woodlot owners who voiced their support for OFRI's landowner education initiatives, and others spoke to the value of OFRI's outdoor education programs that they offer our K-12 students. And other legislators shared their concerns about completely eliminating OFRI, which is what the underlying bill would have done. So it was clear that we would need to make changes for the bill to move forward this session. So I started working with my colleagues to find a path forward that would significantly reform OFRI, curb their advertising power, provide funding to ODF for key positions, all while preserving the landowner education programs that OFRI offers. The end result is the bill you have before you, HB 2357A, which does four important things. First, it directs half of the forest products harvest tax that currently goes to OFRI to be dedicated to the Sound Forestry Management subaccount at the Department of Forestry for Adaptive Management. Second, it directs 17% of the forest products harvest tax that goes to OFRI to the Committee for Family Forest Lands for landowner education initiatives. This ensures that small woodlot owners will have direct control over aid and education programs. Third, it reforms the OFRI board to include a person with a conservation background and a person with fisheries and wildlife management background. And lastly, it prohibits OFRI from generalized advertising for public education, which will prevent it from publishing misleading advertisements. While it was my hope to move forward with the original bill, I believe these changes give us a chance to take a really important step forward. By passing 2357A, a reformed OFRI can remake itself into a true commodity commission, and ODF will finally be able to fund the positions that are critical to moving the ball forward on climate change. So thank you again for your time, and I encourage your support of House Bill 2357A.
Thank you, Representative Salinas. I'm so glad that you were able to join us. I don't know if you need to leave now to get back to another meeting, but you're welcome to stay with us if you can.
Thank you. I can stay for a few minutes.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Ron Byers, and after Ron Byers will be Jim Cathcart and Ellie Hilger.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon. I'm Ron Byers from Tillamook County. I own 14 forested acres on the Trask River that border the Tillamook State Forest. I've lived on the land for over 20 years, having purchased it from a timber company. I'm testifying in support of HB 2357 as amended to assist people like me with small woodlands. We need to change so that there is money earmarked by the Department of Forestry for a committee to work specifically with small woodland owners. We need to see more focused benefit for the revenue we provide. We'd like more support and information as we try to better understand our changing times. For example, it would be useful to know more about the Forest Practices Act and how sustainable forest methods can enhance current regulations. We want to know how we can best protect our land from wildfires. We know it's time to apply climate science to our forest practices, and we have growing concerns about all the combination of pesticides being used today. What are the alternatives? We have seen the impact logging roads have on our woodlands. How can we plan for and minimize this impact? Even more importantly, how can we learn about the effects our harvest practices are having on those drinking water sources relied on by our neighbors and surrounding communities? I can't help but feel that time is of the essence on the issues raised above. The sooner we add dedicated resources to expand our ability to learn and respond, the better our results will be. The more reliable and unbiased information we have going forward can make a critical difference. We want to be a part of the solution. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for the testimony. Jim Cathcart, followed by Ellie Hilger, and then Michael Eisen.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Jim Cathcart. I am the district manager for the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, and I'm testifying today in opposition of House Bill 2357A on behalf of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. Little bit information about me. I'm a professional forester. I spent 17 years with the Oregon Department of Forestry, 15 of those working in landowner assistance, 10 of those working directly with the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. I'm a co-founder of the Partnership for Forestry Education, and some of my work on forestry carbon offsets, both research and policy, has been published by OFRI in the early 2000s. The reason why I'm opposed to Health Bill 2357, though, is maybe different than some of my colleagues in professional forestry. It basically is inefficient fix to the issues. It wrecks what isn't broken in OFRI, and that's the landowner assistance piece of it that's been testified before. And it really doesn't get at the heart of the matter of why OFRI is in so much trouble. I want to focus in on that part because I'm disappointed a little bit. There's always been a tension between OFRI being a commodity commission promoting forest products industry and providing objective information about Oregon's forests. So let's get rid of the commodity commission and promoting the forest products industry piece, and let's center on what Oregonians need, and that is good information about Oregon's forests, and let Oregon develop how they think about forests based on good information. And so I want to point to Senate Bill 828, and really, let's strengthen this board, and let's not be fearful. I don't understand why industry is so fearful of people who don't know things about forests, because that is not exclusive to forest industry. There's lots of people that know things about forests. Let's expand the board, have those voices on there, and do the work that's necessary. So consider changes in the bill that are proposed in Senate Bill 828 on the board composition. Don't wreck the landowner assistance. Don't create the separate account in forestry. Keep that in OFRI. Keep those dedicated funds. That's centralized role.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Ellie Hilger, followed by Michael Eisen. And I want to do a time check with the committee. We still have about 10 people after those two. Again, if your testimony has been largely explained by someone else, you can just quickly say me too, what you agree with. Otherwise, we'll try to fit in as much as we can today as possible. Ellie Hilger, followed by Mike Elias. Is Ellie with us, Ms. Hilger? We'll move to Mike Eliason next.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Eliason, I'm the General Counsel and Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Forest and Industries Council, a trade association representing timberland owners and forest products manufacturers from all over Oregon. Here today to provide testimony opposing House Bill 2357A. As currently drafted, the engrossed version of House Bill 2357 would gut the funding for the Oregon Forest Resources Institute by 2/3, all but eliminating its viability and radically reshaping its mission. We urge the House Revenue Committee to reject these changes and wait for the results of the nearly complete audit of OFRI by the Secretary of State's office that will provide recommendations to the legislature to hopefully provide a higher level of clarity to the agency's mission and duties. We know forestry is one of the largest industries in Oregon and warrants a commodity commission. And make no mistake, in virtually all respects, OFRI serves as a commodity commission for the forest products industry, with funding self-assessed and paid by those who harvest timber. To say it again in a more straightforward way, OFRI receives no general fund dollars. Instead, it's entirely supported by those from the forest products industry, just as all of the agricultural commodity commissions are grower supported. Now, the proponents of House Bill 2357 appear to have been highly influenced by a story last August, which created questionable and unflattering media attention on OFRI, including alleging that the Institute overstepped the statutory prohibition on engaging in authorities in activities related to advocacy. Again, this prohibition is in sharp contrast to other commodity commissions, which are empowered to work directly with legislators on current and proposed legislation. As a result of the allegations, Governor Brown requested the Secretary of State conduct a performance audit of OFRI in order to determine whether the Institute is conducting activities within their authority. Jumping ahead of the conclusions from the audit and radically dismantling OFRI would be incredibly irresponsible. What if the results of the audit show that, on the whole, OFRI is meeting its direction to support the forest products industry and that what needs clarification is vague or confusing language in the statute outlining OFRI's authority? I'll also turn in written testimony, which will expand on this. Thanks for your time today, Representative Nathanson, members of the committee.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Scott Hayes, followed by Claire Clock and Cindy Deacon-Williams.
Good afternoon. My name is Representative Nathanson, committee members. My name is Scott Hayes. My wife and I live on 40 acres here in western Washington County, a few miles from Banks. And we've owned our forest land since 1996. We're certified under the American Tree Farm System as a certified tree farm with our management plan. I'm currently the chair of the Oregon Tree Farm System. And in Oregon, we've got 1,311 tree farms that are certified, and they have about 722,000 acres of certification. And our management planning, our certified management plan, is key to our successes. I'm actually opposed to this bill because it really is breaking something Dr. Jim Cathcart said. It's really not broken. You know, we're end users of the educational opportunities and materials that OFRI has produced in the last decade, several decades. And I think it has benefited us and has also benefited our neighbors. And as far as the Department of Forestry, last Monday, I met with the Oregon Department of Forestry Stewardship Forester Eric Jacobs, and we to review a shelter red harvest that we plan for this summer. And so their strength is on the ground technical support of the Forest Practices Act with landowners like myself, and that's what they do best. So I would encourage the committee to not adopt or not to reject the House bill. 2357A, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes, for your testimony. Next is Claire Clock, followed by Cindy Deacon Williams, and then Mike Barsotti.
Chair Hankinson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Claire Clock, retired farmer and conservation specialist from Corbett, Oregon, and I'd like to refer you to the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts written testimonies for specific facts. But I'd like to analogize in the on the changes of OFRI. It's like having a good car that has a bad driver and a bad gas. I mean, that's what the director and the board was or has been in OFRI. With what was stated in SB 828 helps fix that or does fix that. It's just the fact that it's a good organization. It's just gone totally biased to the timber industry because of the makeup of the executive director and the board. And with that, I would say that I'm in opposition of the bill of 2357 in its present form, but I would it would be great to have those changes. Thank you much, and look forward to hearing more about us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Cindy Deacon Williams.
Yes, Chair Nathanson and members of the House Committee on Revenue. My name is Cindy Deacon Williams. I served on the Board of Forestry for 9 years, from 2012 to 2020. I come today to testify in support of House Bill 2357A. Securing adequate funding for the Department of Forestry to responsibly manage Oregon's forests was a serious challenge for the entirety of my board service. It limited the department's ability to provide adequate support to forest land owners in planning sustainable forest operations. This service shortcoming particularly impacted small and family forest land owners who often rely heavily on technical expertise of department staff. The department's 51 stewardship foresters do an incredible job, but they're stretched too thin. Funding limitations also severely curtailed the department's ability to monitor compliance with and evaluate effectiveness of the Forest Practices Act. We often didn't have the information needed to know whether our rules were consistently being followed or to determine if the rules, even if they were followed, were capable of achieving our aims. Sparse effectiveness monitoring information for Southwestern Oregon meant the board was unable to determine whether existing rules met Clean Water Act obligations in the Siskiyou region. We had to rely on legislative intervention to proceed with rulemaking. Now the department lacks adequate funding to evaluate the effectiveness of stream rules in eastern Oregon. The department's current 5 FTEs dedicated to statewide monitoring clearly are inadequate. The most obvious pressing issues looming over management of Oregon's forests result from the impacts of climate change. Despite strong and unified expressions of concern by the Board of Forestry, funding limitations have hamstrung the department's efforts to rise to these critical science and policy challenges. I strongly encourage the committee to pass HB 2357A. It will help ensure that public dollars will be raised and expended for the best and highest use. I commend what Representative Salinas has developed to address some of the very real problems hindering our ability to sustainably manage Oregon's forests. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is Mike Barsotti, followed by Jennifer Beathy, then Annabelle Morgan after that.
Yes, Chair Nathanson and Vice Chairs Fromm and Rietschke and members of the committee. My name is Mike Barsotti. I'm a family forest landowner in the Linn County area and a retiree from the Department of Forestry where I worked 32 years. I'm proud of what ODF has done and is doing for the Department of Forestry, but this bill is directing ODF to work in areas where it does not have that expertise, while at the same time, others do, such as OFRI. The idea that this bill keeps the landowner education and K through 12 education is false, in that removing 30, 67% of the income will not allow OFRI to continue providing those educations of family forest landowners. Like Scott Hayes mentioned earlier, my property is certified under the American Tree Farm System Standards of Sustainability, which these internationally recognized standards provide sustainable forests, and I rely on OFRI's publications, workshops, and tours to make sure my property meets those international standards. I would like to focus on one particular area. I have written testimony where it goes into much detail, but I'd like to focus on one particular area in regards to asking ODF to provide the education that OFRI now provides. Back in the 70s, the public policy was developed that ODF provided one-on-one landowner assistance, and other agencies and organizations provided the group education. ODF is very...
Mr. Barsotti, I think you mentioned that you do have some written testimony for us, or that you could.
I've already asked, and I have already provided it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that we have it available to read. Next is Jennifer, followed by Annabelle Morgan, and then Julia DeGaw.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Beeth, and I'm a professional forester with Starker Forest, a fifth-generation family-owned forest landowner in Corvallis. While we oppose House Bill 2357A for many reasons, I'll focus my comments on the provision of the bill that explicitly prevents OFRI from advertising about forest practices, including the adequacy or effectiveness of any particular forest practice. This provision intentionally and unreasonably eviscerates the most fundamental function of OFRI. The legislature established OFRI to be the commodity commission for the forest products sector. The purpose of the Oregon Commodity Commissions, according to ORS 576.054, is to educate Oregonians about the quality, care, and methods used in the production of Oregon's commodities. According to ORS 526.640, OFRI's purpose is to increase public understanding of the practice of forestry and the use and benefits of forest products. Without the ability to advertise about forest practices, House Bill 2357-5 removes the core function of OFRI. As a forester for Starker Forest, I personally oversee implementation of Oregon plan work that we have done to improve wildlife habitat and the implementation of the Oregon Forest Practice Act, which contains stringent science-based environmental protections for forestry and has been updated nearly 40 times since 1971. The Forest Practice Act was designed to change over time as science evolves, adapting the latest field-tested and peer-reviewed science into an adaptive regulatory framework. Eliminating OFRI's ability to communicate these constantly evolving laws to the public makes Oregonians less informed. In fact, I think this is really more likely an effort by anti-forestry groups to silence the good work that we do, deliberately creating public confusion and misinformation about forest practices to generate support for unnecessary overregulation in our sector. At the bare minimum, our industry warrants a voice of fact-based information, and as our commodity commission, OFRI is that voice. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the testimony. Annabelle Morgan, followed by Julia DeGaw. Is Annabelle Morgan with us?
Okay, sorry, I was muted. I thought you unmuted me. Okay, thank you very much, Chair Nathanson and Vice Chairs Fun and Richler and committee members for allowing me to testify in opposition of House Bill 2357. My name is Annabelle Morgan and I live in Washington County, and I'm a third generation forest landowner in Lincoln County. And as such, I would like to state that I have benefited greatly from all the educational programs, the cooperation that OFRI has had over the years in the different tree school activities this year during Zoom activities and collaboration with the Extension Service. And I kind of have an issue with the people that are saying that they're putting out, you know, factual things that are not true, because I know that my dad was very, sorry, didn't know that was off, on. He was a tree farmer, and he learned about forestry and became, did his management plan through help with OFRI and other forestry activities. So I think that we have to be aware that knowledge is important in making informed decisions, and that OFRI allows all of us to have the materials we need, not only for individuals, but also for the school children. And I think there's a huge divide between rural and the urban and suburban areas. They do not know about this. And so the informational tree school programs they have are very beneficial. And I will, my testimony you can read, but I am totally with all of the various OFRI people, and I would like to ask you to not pass this House Bill 2357.
Thank you for the testimony. The last person who we will hear from this afternoon is Julia DeGaw.
Oops. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, thank you so much, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Julia DeGraw, and I am I'm the Coalition Director for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, and I also am testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Conservation Network, which is a coalition that represents over 30 organizations from across the state of Oregon in favor of conservation priorities in the state of Oregon. And OFRI, HB 2357A is one of our priority pieces of legislation. And we really support this bill because Oregonians deserve transparency and science-based forest management practices in the state of Oregon. And we're really deeply concerned about the fact that OFRI has its revenue and its practices have not been subject to legislative oversight. And that really shows in how they use their money and how they practice in the state of Oregon. And something that's been really brought to daylight, frankly, by Oregonian articles and others, which is why we urge you to take action this session to make sure that OFRI is really reformed so that it can function as a commodities commission, as people claim it needs to be, and we can actually start having more independent science-based science funded by that money instead. Oregonians deserve science-based forest management practices, and our woodlot owners also deserve to have more independent support that's less funded and influenced, frankly, by the industry. I would also add that there are many issues that that OFRI has, been really irresponsible in the way that it's communicated to Oregonians with its ads. They spend millions of dollars in ads that, frankly, mislead Oregonians in the quality of our forest management practices, basically, especially leading them to believe that their practices are safe for our drinking water sources. And we have a lot of data that indicates that's not the case. So anyway, I'll get my comments to you in writing, and I look forward to continuing the conversation. And please pass this bill out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. We have reached the 5 o'clock hour. The committee we'll need to adjourn now. There are two people who we were not able to hear from this afternoon. That is Bonnie Glendening and Simon Babcock.
I'm here. I wasn't called.
I am explaining that we are not going to have time for the testimony this afternoon. We've reached the 5 o'clock hour. And for those people who were not able to testify today, we will very likely carry over the public hearing until tomorrow. I'm going to confer with staff for just a moment here. We will be at ease while I confer with staff about our scheduling.
Resumed.
Thank you. For anyone who was not able to testify today, I'm carrying over the public hearing to our next meeting, which is tomorrow. Staff will be in touch with you to determine whether you are able to join us for that hearing. We will hear from the last two people if they would still like to testify. Otherwise, as you've heard from other speakers, we are taking written testimony up through tomorrow at 3:15, and we're happy to read that as well. So for today, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2357, but it's carrying over until tomorrow. Committee members, any questions that you would like to get on the record before we meet again tomorrow? And Mr. Alanak, any final words before we adjourn for the day?
Just Madam Chair, that we will be updating the agenda to reflect the bill being carried over to tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Any last words from the committee? Okay, thank you, everybody. We're adjourned for today.